Welcome to another edition of I've Got a Beatles Podcast, an educational, informative, and irreverent look at all things Beatles. I'm David Thurmeyer, music theory professor, songwriter, and owner of a sitar.
And I'm Chris Bragg, writer, comedic actor, and Paul McCartney apologist.
We will dissect some of the most popular Beatles tracks,
as well as some of the duds,
and keep you up to date with the latest news.
So, what do you say, Dave? Let's get to Beatling.
Sounds good to me. Who really was the fifth Beatle?
That's a daunting question.
It is, because you've got so many possibilities for a group like the Beatles that had so many people in their inner circle. You've got a lot of candidates here, and we're going to try to tackle some of them. And I don't know, are we going to actually come up with a winner?
Maybe we will. Maybe we'll each have a vote at the end.
All right, that sounds good.
See who we think. Not eligible are going to be people who did not play or have something to do with any recording.
Right.
So if, say, you're Klaus Voormann. let's just say you're Klaus Voormann. And you didn't, you knew him, you hung out with him a lot, but you didn't actually play on any Beatles recordings. Now, later you would play on several solo recordings. I'm sure we'll talk about them in a future episode. But no Beatles recordings, you're out. Brian Epstein, nice knowing you. You're gone.
Derek Taylor,
Derek
we'll
Taylor,
catch you next
forget.
Time.
Yeah. Alan Klein. I don't think anybody would
talk about Alan Klein.
But Alan Klein is gone.
Yes. And so what we've got is a chronological list for you, starting from, well, all the way back to the Hamburg days here, and the first real Beatle makeup, or like the first real version of the group here. Somebody who actually, he's obscure when you listen to recordings and things, but he actually had a movie made about him. And he's actually been pretty prominent in Beatle lore.
Yeah, the movie Backbeat. Pretty good movie, too.
Yeah.
It's about Stuart Sutcliffe. So, nominee number one, Stuart Sutcliffe. Jealous of who? Jealous of Stu? Jealous of me. There's a little dialogue from the movie. Mm-hmm. That was an actual clip from the movie.
Wow.
You know what? It sounded like me doing an imitation, but it was an actual clip.
Yeah, so number one is Stu Sutcliffe, or Stuart Sutcliffe, who John met first and was a good buddy of his from art school. Best known as probably an artist.
He was with the group, wasn't the best player by a lot of accounts, average at best, but he could have gotten a lot better. He could have gotten more into it as time went on. You don't know.
No.
But what happened to Stu was pretty sad when in Germany.
It is sad, and you're right about his musical ability. There's a funny story in the Beatles anthology, and I think it's also in the George Harrison documentary, when George talks about what Stu's bass playing was like, and he said, oh yeah, we sort of had Stu turn his back to the audience because we were worried that people would see that he didn't know what he was doing on his fingers. So you don't know what would have happened if he hadn't had the unfortunate luck that he had, which was in 1962, he got into a fight, is the old story. He was kicked in the head and had a real bad fight, and then was never the same afterwards, and died of a brain hemorrhage after that.
Also tragically depicted in the film Backbeat, if you want to do some research.
Exactly.
It's not real research. It's just an entertaining movie. But, it's a real sad, and everyone was sad. The George Harrison documentary has a nice moment in there where Klaus Voormann and Astrid are talking about sort of the aftermath of Stuart dying. Astrid was dating him at the time, and This is really sad for everybody, but and very few recordings exist actually where he played on it, but there are a few on Beatles Anthology 1.
Yes, there's George Harrison's first song called You'll Be Mine, and then he plays on a version of Hallelujah, I Love Her So, which I think most people know from Ray Charles. Yeah. And then the song we're going to play is called Cayenne. Sort of forgettable, but I think you'll get the gist of Stew.
Cayenne, a little Stuart Sutcliffe action for you. So that's nominee number one, Stuart Sutcliffe. He was actually in the Beatles, so that's pretty strong nominee.
Yeah, definitely. And nominee number two also was in the Beatles and also had kind of a sad fall from grace and is still alive to have to deal with it, too.
Yeah, this guy was likes to call himself the fifth Beatle a lot. And he was a drummer, but some might say not good enough. Just not as good as they needed. We could hear maybe a little of his drumming right now on a track called Love Me Do. Is Pete Best. You be the judge. Sounds like he's hitting, like, was he actually playing drums, or was he just, like, hitting things?
That sounds like he's got, I don't know, like trash
cans. Something's wrong with that drum, Pete.
Yeah.
No, that drum sounds not right, man.
Yeah, it's real weak. He's all over the place with the time, too, doing weird fills, and I like to play a song from the Decca audition that the Beatles didn't pass. But there's a song that I play for my students, and Pete fills about every two beats in the song. And the students who are not music majors all start laughing. They all talk about the drummer. So it wasn't just the Beatles who figured it out here. We all hear it nowadays. But, of course, they always talk about how Pete was kicked out, not in a very good way. And there's still some debate. I remember hearing Paul talk about, well, we could have done it differently, or maybe we shouldn't have kicked him out the way we did, but, you know, it was meant to be with Ringo, so.
Yeah, so Pete Best is certainly a fifth Beatle nominee. I think it is obvious that he wouldn't have been able to keep up,
right.
I think. It's a certain point. I mean, he wasn't able to keep up.
No.
They got rid of him, and you know, it's too bad for him. I mean, it would be awful.
So number one was Stu Sutcliffe and number two Pete Best, and Pete went along with the Beatles for the next candidate.
Yeah, the Beatles recorded as a sort of a backing group to this number three person, such a great singer. Legendary singer, Tony Sheridan.
Yes, Tony Sheridan was a pretty famous singer around Ireland and England at the time, and the Beatles, it was a big break, actually, for them, because they couldn't get the exposure they needed, and so, hey, let's go to the studio and record a song with this guy who's got a record deal and is kind of famous, so That's what they did. And they recorded a couple songs. The most famous one was this one, My Bonnie.
Yep, there they are. That's the backup band. I guess Tony Sheridan at the time would get various backup bands to play with him and record on his records. This is actually one of only two people who actually have a credit, a label for performance credit on a record with the group. Well, we'll talk about the other one here after a bit.
Indeed.
He is still alive, Tony Sheridan, still performing, I believe.
Yeah, still singing My Bonnie. I wonder if he still sings it in the same key way up high anymore.
I doubt it, as he is now 71 years old.
Yeah, probably not.
So,
and very important in the path to success, so you gotta...
Yeah, and good exposure. You don't just go and you're the star of a TV show, you know?
No.
You're on your guest slots and stuff like that, and then you work your way up to star. Yeah. So that's how I feel about the Beatles playing on that track, and they sound pretty good. It's Tony Sheridan.
Yeah.
There's nominee number three.
Nominee number four is essential to the Beatles' success, and he is still alive, and he is a sir.
George, you want to take that again? Maybe something this gentleman heard a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's Sir George Martin.
Yeah, Sir George Martin, who was the guy who actually took a chance on the Beatles and signed them, or helped sign them, when they would run out of options. And he liked their humor, and he liked their personality. He said they didn't have much to give him right at the beginning, but... Obviously, that changed, and George Martin as producer really made a huge difference and impact on the group.
One might even say he was extraordinarily influential producer of all time. One of the biggest, most influential, considering all the recording techniques that they would eventually get into, and the tape loops, and the all of the stuff on Strawberry Fields and the intricate things they would get into later in their career. The early career, kind of just guiding them and capturing their sound as cleanly, as quickly as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
But getting more and more himself growing and getting more and more experimental for a guy who came from a real classical music background.
Exactly. And that classical music background is heard on a lot of the Beatles tracks, like, well, most famously on Yesterday, his big contribution. That song wouldn't be what it is without George Martin's string arrangement, so...
There are a few songs of the Beatles which are called the Beatles, but technically are only George Martin's creations. You can find these on the soundtrack to Yellow Submarine. And we're going to play one of these, which is called one of these cool tracks. It's pretty much soundtrack tracks to the cartoon film.
Mm-hmm.
But it shows a little bit of his, if left to his own devices, his own kind of style. So let's play Pepperland.
All right. You know, it's interesting hearing that. That melody almost sounds like a Beatles melody. It's very catchy in the same way, but just orchestrated and with classical harmony. So,
yeah,
kind of interesting.
Yeah, and George, you know, worked on all the Beatles records.
Yep, except one.
Except one.
And that other except one, I think he will be the subject, or he'll be discussed in a later podcast.
Yeah.
So George Martin wasn't only just a producer and an arranger, but he actually played piano on a bunch of early Beatles songs, like Not a Second Time and Rock and Roll Music and a lot of the early tunes. When you hear piano, it's always George Martin. So he fits our criteria for being, for appearing on Beatles songs, and obviously had a lot more roles than that.
One person who played, one might argue, one of the best Beatles guitar solos of all time, does deserve a nomination.
Definitely. And this person is known to all as one of the most important guitarists of all time. In fact, there's a recent issue of Rolling Stone magazine that has a listing of the 100 greatest guitarists of all time. And this person is number two.
Really?
Number two. Yes. Goes to...
Number two greatest guitarist of all time is...
Eric Clapton.
E.C., as we like to call him.
Yeah, Chris and I are really fond of E.C.'s early 80s and 80s songs in particular. He likes the Phil Collins stuff.
We like to maybe make fun of... I mean, I could generally kind of like Eric Clapton.
Yeah.
Who, after playing with the Beatles, went on to great fame.
Of course. Unfortunately,
no. Eric Clapton, had played with Cream by this point.
And the Yardbirds.
The Yardbirds. And
yeah.
I don't know if it was shortly after this he played with Derek and the Dominoes.
It's right after that, yeah.
And then had a long solo career, including... some great songs like Promises and songs of that nature, and some duds like,
you know what?
Forever Man.
And you
Forever
know what
man? Forever Man. But
you know what other song sucks by Eric Clapton is I Get Off on 57 Chevy. That is like the worst of the worst.
Yeah, it's really bad. But he does a good I had a tape of and I think it only had like maybe his best of Eric Clapton, where there's like a watch on the cover.
Oh yeah, Timepieces.
Timepieces, that's right. And I Shot the Sheriff was on that, and
yep,
some other ones of that, you know.
Yeah.
Promise, the aforementioned Promises, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
But once you dig a little further. Okay.
The bench empties a little bit there.
The bench empties, yeah. Not the greatest songwriter in the world, but excellent guitarist. And he can be heard, of course, famously on the Beatles track, playing for one of his closest friends in all of the world, George Harrison. Here he is with a little number called Why My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Still my guitar.
The whole story with Clapton coming was he helped clear up some of the tension among the four Beatles when he came in, because George said, oh yeah, all of a sudden everybody was on their best behavior when Clapton walked in and was nice and smiling and laughing, and so it really helped spice up the session quite a bit.
Yeah, a couple of times George was proactive and would do things like that. You don't think of George, you think of him as, you know, these titles, the quiet one. You don't think of him as a guy who's like injecting, like making the band do things. But that was one instance when he brought in a buddy because he thought, oh, this will change the tone of how this stuff's going. A more sharper example of that is our next nominee, where he felt the sessions were going so horribly poorly. He might have remembered back to bringing Eric Clapton in and how that kind of changed the tone of those sessions. And he brought in a keyboard player to play on a lot of the songs which would eventually make the record Let It Be.
The keyboardist, the American keyboardist, Billy Preston. And apart from the fact that just visually he added something and added a whole different background being African American, but his keyboard playing is just essential on a couple famous Beatles songs, including
he played on quite a few. Get Back. Mm-hmm. He actually played at the Rooftop concert,
and we've got a recording here of his performance, or him playing on the Rooftop performance of Don't Let Me Down. Don't let me down.
She does. And if somebody loved me like she does, oh, she does. Yeah, she does.
I like that version because it's, well, of course it's a Rooftop concert, but there's a great point where John forgets the lyrics.
It goes, and no depletion, gashy, bougie goo.
And they're all cracking up in the background.
Get Back was actually credited to the Beatles with Billy Preston, which was the only other time from earlier that someone other than the Beatles is credited on one of the records. He would play on quite a few of those tracks on the Let It Be sessions. He would also play on a couple songs in the Abbey Road album, contributed to I Want You and Something, and he died in 2006.
Yeah, it's been that long.
Yeah, he had a fairly notable solo career, but not maybe mostly early on, right around the time he was playing on that. He had a few hits through Apple Records, had a few hit records, but
he also had a huge afro.
Yes, and a great hat at the concert for Bangladesh,
and a dance step too.
Yeah. So, then the Beatles broke up, and, you know, didn't play again, except after, John's passing and for the anthology, they're like, hey, you know what, let's get together, let's put some tracks back together, let's get the Bob back together, mates, maybe we could go touring, no, let's just play on a couple of John's old recordings.
Yep, and that leads us to 1994, when the Beatles took some of John's old the remaining Beatles took some of John's recordings, and most famously, this first one is probably the most famous, and I know you and I were actually, I recall going home, we were together or something, we were out And I remember rushing home late at night because I taped it, the Beatles anthology, and they made this big hoopla about how at the end of it, they're going to have a clock counting down till the new Beatles song is played. And I remember I was sitting in my apartment, and my roommates were asleep, and I was like, really, like, my ear to the TV. I couldn't wait to hear this song.
Yeah.
That song was Free as a Bird. George goes, whatever happened to Lives and Wheels?
I love George singing on it. I love Paul singing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the lyrics that were added to it. It was a good project and well done.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who was in charge of putting all these elements together is a guy named Jeff Lynne. Jeff Lynne was the leader of the Electric Light Orchestra, better known as ELO, which you know from many, many, many 70s hits. I gotta give Jeff Lynne a lot of credit for taking an old source tape of John, which wasn't recorded that well, just on probably on a cassette.
Yeah, it was.
In his apartment, and actually putting it together with new music and making it a not just one but two listenable tracks. I kind of like the other track just as well, the Real Love. I think that one's pretty good too.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one thing that drives me crazy about Jeff Lynne and his work with the Beatles is He makes it all sound so overproduced, and the drums, Ringo's drums, sound as plastic and overproduced, and clearly Jeff Lynne.
Yeah,
you know, it sounds a lot like Cloud Nine, and it's just real. Ugh. It
sounds like ELO almost in some ways.
Yeah, it sounds like late ELO, and just real kind of like basic drumming that's really plastic and so
yeah.
I don't know, how do you feel about these two tracks and what he did to them?
Well, I think I'm with you on that. I think he gets a lot of credit for all the work he did putting it together and being really helpful in getting George back in the limelight again with Cloud Nine. Despite what you may think of Cloud Nine, it was a big hit for George and got him back in form. And also with the Traveling Wilburys too, he was a big force in there. So I think those are all good things. As for his production, I don't really like it myself. Yeah, I think it's overproduced and this sounds, I don't know, very processed.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. But
that's my big complaint with these two tracks, and I think it, I wouldn't say it necessarily ruins them,
yeah,
but it doesn't make them as, they're not as awesome as they could have been.
No, exactly. Imagine if George Martin had been brought in to do that. I think he said he was retired or something at that point. He couldn't hear anymore, but he didn't want to be involved. That was the story. But I think it would have been much different with George Martin. It's decision time. So let's review our nominees for Fifth Beatle. And this is, now I know someone's going to comment and say, oh, but Brian Epstein was the Fifth Beatle, or somebody else, Neil Aspinall or something, but this is only in relation to people who've played on Beatles tracks or had a real hand in their musical productions.
Yeah.
So here are the nominees again. Want to read them off?
Okay, you got Stuart Sutcliffe, Pete Best, Tony Sheridan, George Martin, Eric Clapton, Billy Preston, Jeff Lynne, or Joss Whedon. I said those two different.
Honorable mentions, yeah.
Honorable mention.
Yeah.
Do you want to go first or me?
Yeah, you probably could tell from when we were talking about each candidate, but I have to go with George Martin because I don't think the Beatles' music would sound anywhere as good as it does without his influence and his training and his pushing and going along with their experimental impulses, like you said. So I have to give it up for Sir George Martin.
I have to go with Yoko. No. For screaming and and we he looks so fierce. No.
Birthday.
No, I'm going to go also with George Martin. I think at a certain point, the Beatles did not play. In fact, I've had endless arguments with my friend who just doesn't like the Beatles at all. And I say, I think what you think is a rock band is a band that goes out and plays.
Yeah.
In front of people. And as a rock band that does that, the Beatles don't really compare with, you know, The Who, Led Zeppelin, a lot of these groups.
Right.
As a performance group. But they were, and the reason they are brilliant is they were a recording group. And the guy who led all of that, at least all of the good parts of it, there's some misinfluence and some Phil Spector things got put over some of their tracks, placed over some of their tracks. So I like to put that. But George Martin was just absolutely essential. I mean, some of the greatest, I Am the Walrus, and some of the greatest Beatles tracks are, he's not just got his hands on them, they're essential to the mechanics of how it works. So
A Day in the Life.
It's gotta be. Yeah, A Day in the Life. Yeah, exactly. So it's gotta be George Martin. I mean, come on. Maybe if I had a number two, it might be it might be Billy Preston to me.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
He played on a lot of tracks.
Yeah, that's good.
And more tracks than, you know, Pete Best and Stuart Sutcliffe ended up doing. So
true.
So there's that. We've decided.
Wow, and we agree.
For everyone.
Yeah.
For all of history, who the fifth Beatle is.
George Martin, woo! And on that note, we're going to leave it there for this time, so... Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back with another podcast soon, and hopefully we'll deal with some of the other fifth Beatle candidates who are the non-musical types and I think that might be a little more contentious. Well,
yeah. Well, anytime we bring up Alan Klein,
it's going to be contentious. All right, we'll catch you next time.